You ever think about like how much power the federal government actually has, even when it comes to like businesses that seem totally local?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Today, we are going to take a deep dive into a Supreme Court case. It's Stafford v. Wallace from 1922.
Okay.
And this case basically like reshaped how we think about federal power, especially over businesses that on the surface look like they're just operating within a single state.
I see.
So, we often think about interstate commerce.
Right.
This case, it came after some early decisions about what interstate commerce even means, like SWIFT. But this one, Stafford, it landed right in the middle of the progressive era,
Oh,
when
wow.
there was all this, energy around busting monopolies and regulating big businesses.
Yeah.
So it really shows this like back and forth, this tension between the states and the federal government when it comes to who gets to control the economy.
Interesting.
And that's exactly what we're gonna like dig into today. Like, when can Congress actually step in and regulate a local business? We're gonna use Stafford v. Wallace to, help us understand that.
Gotcha.
Now, this might sound like something you'd hear in like a boring law school lecture, but trust me, it's not.
But
For anyone who wants to get like the whole picture of how far the federal government's power can reach,
right.
and especially for all you future lawyers out there,
Yeah.
this case is super important.
Okay.
It basically like redefined what we even mean when we say interstate
I
commerce,
see.
and it set the stage for a whole bunch of federal laws that came after.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
So to really grasp what's going on in Stafford, you kind of have to picture the scene.
Okay.
We're talking about the Chicago Union Stockyards.
The Chicago Union Stockyards. Okay.
Imagine this. It's the early 1900s. Chicago is this like massive hub for the meatpacking industry.
Yeah.
And these stockyards, they were enormous. Like, we're talking a staggering 90% of
Crap.
all the livestock in the entire US. It was passing through these yards. It wasn't just a local market. This was like the heart of the nation's livestock trade.
So it was really important.
Huge. Like, so picture this. You've got trains coming in from all over the West, loaded with cattle, sheep, pigs, all coming into Chicago.
Wow.
Right there in Illinois, these animals are bought and sold. But that's not the end of the journey.
Okay.
From Chicago, they're loaded onto even more trains, shipped off to the East Coast for processing, and eventually they end up on people's plates all across the country.
So you're saying there's this like continuous flow of livestock and meat.
Exactly. It was a constant stream, all tied together, and that's super important for understanding why Congress decided to, step in.
Okay, so what do they do?
Well, fast forward to 1921. Congress passes this law called the Packers and Stockyards Act.
Packers and Stockyards Act.
All right.
Okay.
And basically, this act was all about bringing some order to the stockyards. So, what it did was it had a couple of key parts. First, it said, look, anyone working in these stockyards, commission agents, dealers, you guys, you all got to register with the Secretary of Agriculture. It was basically like getting a federal license to operate.
Okay, so like a regulatory kind of thing.
Exactly. But then it gets more interesting. The act also said that all the rates and fees that the stockyards were charging for their services, they had to be fair and reasonable. And they were really trying to crack down on all this shady stuff that was happening, things like price manipulation and these unfair practices that were giving big players an advantage.
So they wanted to make sure everyone was playing by the rules, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The whole point was to break up these monopolies that were forming in the stockyards. People suspected, and they were probably right, that these powerful companies were basically rigging the system, manipulating prices to benefit themselves, and that hurt everyone else, the ranchers who were selling their livestock. They were getting squeezed. And of course, it hurt the consumers who were buying the meat. They were paying inflated prices.
So this law was trying to like level the playing field a bit.
Exactly, make it fair for everyone involved. But like you can imagine, not everyone was thrilled about the federal government coming in and, telling them how to run their business.
Yeah. So what happened? Did someone push back?
Oh yeah, they did. There was this company, Stafford & Co. They were a livestock dealer operating right there in the Chicago stockyards.
Okay.
And they decided to challenge this Packers and Stockyards Act in court. They
Yeah.
said it was unconstitutional.
So what was their argument? Like, why did they think Congress couldn't regulate them?
Their main point was that, everything they did, all the buying and selling of livestock, it was happening right there in the stockyards,
Yeah.
which were physically located within the state of Illinois. So they were like, hey, this is purely an interstate business. It's all happening within Illinois. Congress has no power to tell us what to do. This is a matter for the state of Illinois to handle, not the federal government.
Okay, so their argument is that it's local, so it should be under state control.
Exactly. And that's where things get, like, really interesting from a legal perspective.
Okay.
Because the Supreme Court had to figure out this key question. When does a business, even if it seems local, when does it cross that line and become part of this bigger thing called interstate commerce?
Right.
Because that's when Congress gets the power to step in and regulate it.
So, like, what did the court decide?
Well, this case took the court right to the heart of the Commerce Clause. It's Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution.
Right, the Commerce Clause.
And they had to figure out, were these stockyard transactions just isolated local things like Stafford & Co. was arguing? Or were they actually a crucial part of this bigger stream of commerce that was flowing across state lines?
It's like, where do you draw the line?
Exactly. And to answer that, they looked back at a previous case.
Okay.
Swift & Co. v. United States. This was back in 1905. Mm. And this case had established something called the Stream of Commerce Doctrine.
The Stream of Commerce. Okay.
And this doctrine, it basically says, look, Congress has the power to regulate interstate commerce, right?
Right.
But it's not just limited to the exact moment when goods cross state lines.
Okay.
It extends to any local activity that's part of this continuous flow of commerce between states. So even if something's happening entirely within one state,
right,
if it's an essential link in this chain of interstate commerce, Congress can regulate it.
Makes sense.
And in Stafford, the court relied heavily on this stream of commerce idea.
Okay.
They were like, look, these stockyards, they're not just some random local market. They're a critical part of this national system of moving livestock from the ranchers to the consumers. And the majority opinion in Stafford, it was written by Chief Justice Taft, and he had this really great analogy.
Okay.
He described the Chicago Union stockyards as the throat through which the current of commerce flows.
Okay, that's a powerful image.
Yeah, it really captures the idea that the stockyards were this crucial channel, right? It's not the start, it's not the end, it's the connection between all these different states.
It's the middle, yeah.
So what the court was saying was, look, you can't separate the buying and selling that's happening in these stockyards from the bigger picture of interstate commerce.
Because it's all connected, right?
Exactly. The local stuff, it's too intertwined with the national flow of goods to treat them as separate things. And they said those transactions, even if they seem local, they have a direct and significant impact on the entire interstate market for livestock.
Because if the stockyards aren't running smoothly, the whole system gets messed up.
Exactly. And the Packers and Stockyards Act, remember, it wasn't just some abstract legal thing. It was trying to solve some real problems.
You know, price fixing and stuff.
Exactly. And this is where the role of the Secretary of Agriculture gets interesting.
Okay.
The act gave the secretary a ton of power.
Really?
It said the secretary could make rules and regulations for the stockyards.
Okay.
They could investigate any complaints about unfair practices.
Mm.
And super importantly, they could enforce the act, you know, make sure everyone was actually following the rules.
So the federal government was really hands-on.
Very hands-on. This wasn't just a suggestion. It was serious business. They wanted to ensure those rates were fair and that those big companies weren't colluding, weren't fixing prices, you know, all those things that were hurting the ranchers and the consumers.
It's like they saw a problem, a national problem.
Yeah.
And they took action to fix it.
And the court, they agreed that this federal oversight was needed because without it, these unfair practices could have a ripple effect across the whole economy. You know, ranchers would be forced to sell their animals for way less than they were worth.
Yeah.
And consumers would end up paying way more for meat. So it was a situation where the government saw that they needed to intervene at this central hub to keep the whole system from, you know, collapsing.
Wow. Okay.
But of course, like with any Supreme Court case, there's always another side to the story.
Okay.
And in Stafford, there was a dissenting opinion.
Oh, okay. Who dissented?
It was Justice McReynolds. He actually dissented, but he didn't write a full opinion.
Oh, interesting.
So we don't have all the details of his thinking, but from what we know, he was basically concerned about the majority opinion going too far.
Oh, okay.
He thought that by regulating these activities in the stockyards, which he saw as just incidental, you know, local things, the federal government was overstepping its boundaries. He felt they were encroaching on powers that should really belong to the states.
So he was drawing a line between interstate commerce and things that should stay under state control.
Right. Even if those local things had some effect on interstate trade, he was worried about this expansion of federal power and what it meant for the balance of power in our system.
Okay, so it was more about the principle of federalism for him.
Exactly. He was concerned about protecting states' rights, but the majority opinion, the one that went with the stream of commerce idea, that's the one that became the law of the land.
Okay, so how did Stafford affect things going forward? Like, what happened after this case?
Well, Stafford v. Wallace, it really solidified the federal government's power to regulate entire industries, even if parts of those industries seem to operate only within one state.
I see.
It was a major shift away from a really strict, you know, state lines view of commerce toward a more practical approach.
Right.
You know, one that recognizes that the economy doesn't just stop at state borders.
Yeah, it's all connected.
It's all connected, exactly.
So it wasn't just about livestock anymore.
Oh, absolutely not. This case had huge implications beyond just the meatpacking industry. Like, think about all the laws that came out of the New Deal era in the 1930s.
Right.
You know, the National Labor Relations Act.
Oh, yeah.
The Fair Labor Standards Act.
Mm-hmm.
Those were all about regulating labor and working conditions. And Stafford v. Wallace provided this crucial legal foundation for those laws. It said, look, if something has a direct and significant impact on interstate commerce, the federal government can step in and regulate it.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, the reach of the federal government, it just expanded dramatically.
So that idea of direct and significant impact, that's really important.
Huge. It became a key test for whether Congress could regulate something. Even though the court in Stafford didn't use those exact words,
yeah,
their reasoning made it pretty clear that that was the standard. So after Stafford, courts started giving Congress a lot more leeway.
Okay.
They basically said, look, unless it's crystal clear that something has absolutely zero connection to interstate commerce, we're going to defer to Congress's judgment on this.
That makes sense.
So, big picture here, Stafford v. Wallace, it was a turning point. It really showed that even seemingly local businesses could be subject to federal regulation if they were important enough to the national economy. And it paved the way for a much more active role for the federal government in shaping the American economy as a whole.
So what's the key takeaway for our listeners, especially those future lawyers?
I think the most important thing to remember about Stafford v. Wallace is that it showed us that even if a business looks local, if it's part of this bigger web of interstate commerce, the feds can step in. And the court recognized that sometimes, to keep things fair, to protect consumers and businesses, the federal government needs to have a say, even in areas that might traditionally have been left to the states.
And understanding Stafford, it's not just history, right?
Oh, absolutely not.
It's crucial for understanding the whole scope of the Commerce Clause. And, you know, the Commerce Clause, it's like the cornerstone of federal power over the economy.
Exactly. And for anyone studying law, especially constitutional law, Stafford v. Wallace, it's like a must-know case. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Stafford v. Wallace today, think about this.
Okay.
The stream of commerce idea, it broadened the reach of the federal government significantly.
Right.
But it also leaves us with some interesting questions.
Like what?
Well, think about the world today.
Yeah.
We have this huge internet economy.
Yeah.
Things are so interconnected.
Right.
So given how broadly Stafford interpreted the Commerce Clause, what kinds of industries or activities today, things that maybe seem local at first glance, could actually fall under federal regulation because of their impact on the national or even global economy?
That's a great question.
It really makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Well, that's it for our deep dive into Stafford v. Wallace.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I learned a lot.
Yeah, me too.
I'm glad we did this.
I'm glad we did this too.
All right.
And we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Bye.